Unlike her campaign 8 years ago, Hillary Clinton is going small, meeting in small groups in early states like Iowa. This hour, we compare her campaign then and now. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We start off with Iowa Public Radio correspondent Dean Borg, who was with Hillary Clinton in Iowa yesterday on the first day of her new presidential campaign. Then Kelly Winfrey of Iowa State University joins us on this Politics Wednesday for the first time, along with Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. We'll also ask him about the campaign of Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who also officially threw his hat into the ring this week. Join our discussion. First, this hour's news. It's Politics Day here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The newly declared presidential campaigns of Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio, the focus of the hour today. In just a moment, we'll be joined by this week's political analysts, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa and Kelly Winfrey of Iowa State University. But first, Hillary Clinton opened her presidential campaign yesterday here in Iowa, in Monticello. She's in the state today as well, talking with small business owners. Iowa Public Radio's correspondent Dean Borg traveled to cover Hillary Clinton yesterday. He joins me now. Hi, Dean.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Clinton traveled to Iowa in a black van with tinted windows, a van she calls Scooby. Where did you catch up with her?
Well, I had to go early, Ben. It's a small group setting, but when you cover presidential candidates, it's often check in early. And this was almost a candidate or a president where you check in several hours early. She wasn't scheduled to speak at the Monticello Kirkwood satellite campus until 1:30 Tuesday afternoon. Press check-in was at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So I was there at 10 and had that check-in took about 5 minutes. And from then, it was cooling my heels.
So even she wants to portray herself as a small candidate to earn people's support, she has a large entourage and, of course, one of the most recognized people in the United States.
That's right. And there were many. The contrast, you know, the setting. The setting was a small auto mechanics shop. Yeah, I want to say classroom, and it is classroom, but it's a shop. There were two vehicles in there with their hoods up, and I think three or four engines sitting around there near the tables where Mrs. Clinton and the group eventually were seated. But it was a mechanics classroom, and only a few people able to get in there. I would say media people, I would say maybe 50 to 60 people in there, but there were dozens outside who could not get in, were not credentialed to get in. And contrast that little setting with out in the parking lot, three or four satellite trucks and rows of press and media cars and trucks.
Okay. Inside the building where you were with her, what were the goals? What were the issues she was addressing?
Well, she held up four fingers and said, "We need to build the economy of tomorrow, not yesterday." She said, second one, "We need to strengthen families and communities because that's where it starts." And then we need to fix our dysfunctional political system, as she phrased it, and get accountable money out of it. That's a quote from her. Once and for all, even, she said, if that takes a constitutional amendment. And then number four, we need to protect our country from threats that we see and the ones that are on the horizon.
So I'm here in Iowa to begin a conversation about how we do that and to hear from people about what's on your minds, what the challenges you see are. And I'm going to work hard to meet as many people. I'll be rolling out ideas and policies about what I think will work, but I want it to be informed by what's actually working and to build on what works going forward and to stand up against those who have a different vision of our country, a different one than I grew up with and a different one that I think is best for everybody.
Hillary Clinton speaking yesterday, Dean Borg was covering it, talking with Dean Borg for a few minutes before we get to our political analysts. Now, Dean, you covered her first presidential campaign here in Iowa in 2007 and 2008. This is a marked contrast.
a marked contrast for sure, because before she was doing big events and really wasn't accessible much in small group settings like that, and certainly not in a one-on-one or group such as Iowa Press at Iowa Public Television. We had difficulty scheduling Mrs. Clinton until the very last, when it became apparent that she was in a real tight race with Barack Obama and others.
Tell us, people might be interested, how do these everyday people in these small settings get selected? Any insights into that? Because not just anybody can walk into a cafe with Hillary Clinton or this setting, a mechanics training garage.
Well, I think the setting here was, obviously very selected. There was a student there from Central City. I believe that was the one that was going on to the Naval Academy. There was a non-traditional Kirkwood student, single mother of three. There was a high school principal from, I believe, Central City, and a teacher, and Mick Starkovich, who is president of Kirkwood. So those people composed the group.
Mm-hmm. On a personal level, having covered her campaign here in Iowa in 2007 and 2008, and now in 2015, does she seem different on a personal level, interacting with people, with the press?
Well, I don't know about the press yet. We've yet to see, but I think so. In fact, I thought yesterday her media people were handling the arrangements were more than cordial. It seemed to me like they'd taken a course at the Disney, hostess and the way that they were really very attentive and wanting to make sure that everything was going fine. Incidentally, Ben, coincidentally, Kirkwood hosted the final event in her 2008 presidential campaign leading up to the caucuses. That was at the Cedar Rapids campus. And contrasting, that was at their big recreation center, big rally event, and there may be some of those, but contrast that with opening this new 2016 in at Kirkwood's satellite Monticello campus in a classroom where, a mechanics classroom where we could barely fit 100 people in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned, we heard a little bit about the goals she's pursuing. Did she pass along any rationale as to why she's putting herself through this campaign to become president?
Well, it was an educational setting there yesterday, and the questions and answers with the group that I described was on their educational experiences. Then she, emphasizing her own experiences growing up in Chicago, she said she knew it was important to get a good education, not knowing what it was going to lead to, but she was preparing herself.
That's what I want for everybody. You know, I have this new granddaughter, and I want her to have every opportunity, but I want every child in our country to have every opportunity. And that's one of the main reasons that I decided to run, because believe me, I know that it's not going to be easy, that I'm going to have to work hard to earn every single vote and get every caucus goer I can round up to show up next February. But I just felt like I couldn't walk away from what I see as the challenges we face.
Okay, Hillary Clinton there, a more intimate side of Hillary Clinton, and we'll be following this. Dean Borg, thank you very much. Dean Borg, Iowa Public Radio correspondent, covering Hillary Clinton on her first day of her campaign, of her brand new presidential campaign. Dean Borg, thanks.
You're welcome, Ben.
It's Politics Day here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Joining me now, Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa, one of our regular political analysts on Wednesday Politics. Tim Hagel in our Iowa City studio. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
Joining us, a newcomer to our stable of political experts, Kelly Winfrey is joining us for the first time from our Ames studio, lecturer in communication studies at the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. Kelly, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello, Ben. Hello, Tim.
Hey.
Well, we want to focus the first part of our conversation, continue talking about Hillary Clinton. We just heard from Dean Borg there. We want to reach out to you. How do you size up Hillary Clinton's presidential candidacy? Do you see her as a potential person you could support? What would you like to hear from her? What issue would you like to hear from her? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. There's already some action on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. That's where you can leave a comment or a question, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Hillary announced her campaign in a video online. Now, she doesn't appear in this video until the very end, at about a minute 50 seconds into the video. Let's hear the part where she comes into the picture.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead, because when families are strong, America is strong. So I'm hitting the road to earn your vote, because it's your time, and I hope you'll join me on this journey.
Hillary Clinton's first campaign video. Let's turn to you, Tim. What did you think of this way to launch a campaign in a new way, a reintroduction to Hillary Clinton?
Well, starting with the video, it was well made, and she came across as personable, more so than what people often suggest that she is, or she didn't seem cold or strident or something like that. And that's what you would expect in a campaign video like that. But what was interesting, of course, was that it was done in a video, and of course, the famous tweet that she sent out as well. And in that sense, it was a very low-key approach that for other people, like we saw Marco Rubio in his announcement, or Rand Paul and his, or others, are usually have a big crowd of supporters cheering them on, and they give kind of a rousing type of speech to show that people are behind them. And she's just taking this much more low-key kind of approach, which in a sense she can do because she doesn't have serious competition. And so she can kind of go into the campaign more slowly and sort of, I suppose from her perspective, build momentum until we get to the general election.
Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was listening to it, Tim, the first time I clicked onto it online, I thought, oh, here's the online ad that comes before the announcement, because it looked so different. And I said, wait a minute, did the videos get mixed up here? No, this is the online announcement. Kelly Winfrey, what was your reaction to this way of launching a campaign via video?
Well, Ben, actually, I had the exact same thought you did when I first watched the video. I thought, oh, this is an advertisement before her announcement. But I do think that, as Tim said, you know, it's a different approach. It's a little bit more relaxed, which I think she needs. In 2007, she actually had a video as well announcing her intentions to start a campaign, but it was a very different approach. There weren't any other people pictured. It was her sitting on her couch, and she talked about kind of a long list of issues. But in this one, I think that we're starting to see what her theme will be throughout the campaign, which is more of a focus on kind of the average American, maybe more focus on the middle class and the economy. And I think that it went a long ways to kind of make her a little bit more relatable to a lot of different types of Americans.
Now, Kelly, we want to mention that you research women in politics at the CAT Center. You've looked in depth at Clinton's 2008 campaign, media coverage there too. What else can you tell us in terms of contrasting this launch with the launch and the campaign 8 years ago by Hillary Clinton?
Well, so far, it seems like there were some lessons learned from 2008. Some research that I did with a colleague at the University of Kansas, we looked at her political advertisements in the primary season. And one major finding was that she didn't have a lot of focus when it came to discussing issues. About 44% of her advertisements talked about 3 to 4 different issues. And from ad to ad, those were not the same set of issues. So I think she really lacked focus in that way. And she also tended to emphasize traits that are more stereotypically masculine, which generally is a good idea because they're associated with the presidency, things like being tough, being determined. The problem is that Hillary, unlike a lot of female presidents, is not perceived as very warm and compassionate and honest. And I think that this video and the settings that she has for her recent Iowa tour is trying to emphasize some of those kind of more likability qualities.
Mm-hmm. Tim Hagel, do you see her making up for shortcomings she may have had in the last campaign, the shortcomings that perhaps Kelly alluded to there? What would you say, I guess, is what I'm asking. What should Hillary be this time that she wasn't last time?
You know, it's interesting the way you ask that question. It's like, what should Hillary be, as if that she's going to mold herself to whatever it is that she thinks is going to
require. Well, this is how campaign strategists work.
No, I know. Right? I realize that, but it's kind of funny because that's what some people sort of use as a negative against her.
Yes.
But, you know, the comment about how last time around she was unfocused, and I think to some extent that may have been, aside from anything specific to her, the fact that she was going to be in a more vigorous campaign for the nomination, that despite the fact that she was considered the odds-on favorite early on, she did have at least some competition. And regardless of whether you thought Barack Obama at that time, as a fairly new senator, was going to be the one to give her that competition, she did have John Edwards in the race, who had been, you know, previous vice presidential nominee, so he was going to give it another shot and some other folks. And so she had to sort of deal with issues that they were bringing up as well, where this time she has the ability to control her agenda and what she wants to talk about to a much greater extent, at least right now. Now, of course, if something happens, you know, you never know, and all of a sudden maybe somebody like O'Malley or Webb or somebody else starts to make some inroads on her, then she may have to drill down to certain issues a little bit more. But right now, she controls the issues, mm-hmm. the agenda.
I wonder, Kelly, in looking at her campaign, what is the way she deals with gender, given that most politicians are male and we've never had a female president? How are you looking? What ways are you looking for gender to be apparent in Hillary's style, in the coverage of her as a candidate?
Well, I think, you know, there are a few issues here. As I mentioned, female candidates in general are perceived to be a little bit more warm and honest, but that's not a benefit that Hillary Clinton's really had. And so I think that she'll really try to emphasize those kind of traditional feminine qualities to be more perceived as trustworthy and to be more relatable. I think also in 2008, she was very hesitant to talk about her gender as an issue or the possibility that she would be the first female president. Part of that might be because she was running against Barack Obama, who could, you know, was the first African-American president. But I also think that she wanted it to be more about the issues, which we'd hope that would be the case. But I think that this time she's already, you know, she's been given a lot of speeches about the role of gender equality. And I think that the fact that she is a woman is something that she doesn't necessarily need to play up, but shouldn't deny that she would be the first female president. Mm-hmm. Because there are certainly people that are very excited by that within the Democratic Party.
Okay. And we saw that in the video, too, that there were plenty of women, were there not, Kelly, seen mm-hmm. there, single mothers and others, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, you had in the video, you had women of different races, different ages, women with children, you know, women starting new careers. And so that sort of thing is something that can be very relatable to female voters.
Join our conversation as we size up the newly launched campaign of Hillary Clinton, a second time around here in Iowa, her reintroduction to Iowans. What do you think of her as this presidential candidate in 2015? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Anthony is with us from Waterloo. What is your impression of the campaign so far for Hillary Clinton, Anthony?
I think it went pretty well. I mean, I think I'd vote for her. She's probably the best Republican candidate that there is.
Republican candidate? You intentionally said that?
I most certainly did.
Why?
I think she's pretty pro-corporate, and that tends to be more of a Republican field. But, I mean, she's still, you know, she's well-rounded and still has a lot of good assets that she could provide. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anthony, thank you very much for your view from Waterloo, 1-866-780-9100. Interesting bit of humor there, Tim Hagel. Where does Hillary Clinton fit in the Democratic Party?
Well, that in some sense, that kind of remains to be seen. We do see some agitation on the part of the more progressive side of the Democrats, the folks that support Senator Elizabeth Warren, the Run Warren Run folks, very active on Twitter and elsewhere. And they're concerned that Hillary Clinton is not liberal enough, not progressive enough. And so O'Malley has kind of, Governor O'Malley has said similar sorts of things. things. And so in some sense, that's good for Hillary Clinton because it shows her as perhaps being more moderate, which would be good come the general election. And again, because Clinton doesn't have any competition for the nomination, she can kind of ride that a little bit. And maybe, of course, if Jim Webb were to get into the race, then maybe it pushes her back to the left a little bit. But Hillary does have to deal with some criticism, as the caller was indicating, about the corporate side of things and big money and all of that. But I don't think it's going to be enough to hurt her in any serious way.
Kelly, what do you have to say on that front?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's certainly some people out there that would really like to see Senator Warren run, but she's made it very clear she has no intention of doing that in this cycle. And I think that, you know, as a moderate, you have a better chance of winning a general election. And it's something that sometimes has hurt people in primary seasons. If we look back to the 2012 election and the Republican debates leading up to that, it was a race to the right, which comes back to hurt you in a general election. So, you know, she certainly has some things to answer, like, as Tim mentioned, about being more pro-corporation. But that's, I think, what she's really trying to do with her messaging now is to show herself as someone that can represent the average American.
When Hillary Clinton, the former senator, former secretary of state and first lady, announced for president on Sunday, I wonder if you caught this, Kelly and Tim. She smiled in the camera and said, "I'm Hillary Clinton, not I'm Hillary Rodham Clinton." Kelly, thoughts on why this may have been left out?
You know, there's a lot of possibilities. To be honest, it's less of a mouthful to just say Hillary Clinton. And that's what most people really call her in the news media and average people. And, you know, using her maiden name, you know, might even turn some people off. So I think that she was just trying to be simple and be like an average American person.
Given that you've done a lot of research on her previous campaign when researching women in politics as well, do you think she was treated fairly in 2008 as a woman in terms of media coverage?
It wasn't the worst a woman's ever been treated by the media, but it certainly wasn't the best. And some of the research that we did, especially on television news and cable news, there was a lot of blatant sexism.
Like? Do you have an example?
Yeah, I have a great one. Tucker Carlson on MSNBC was quoted as saying that whenever she's on TV, he involuntarily crosses his legs. And I think that sort of thing is some clear sexism. Also, the way that she was talked about, you know, the word ambitious when you're talking about a woman often means something very different than when you're talking about an ambitious man. And it was kind of seen as she was overly ambitious and calculating. And that sort of narrative that was in a lot of media discussion painted her in a very negative light. And you don't see those same sorts of words being negatively used to talk about male candidates.
Do you anticipate, we have to go to break in a few seconds, but do you anticipate that in 8 years, media culture and so forth has evolved to have that less of a problem?
I think overall, probably it will be less of a problem. I do think, though, on kind of on shows that are trying to, you know, get people angry, you probably still see a lot of those things.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk more with our political analyst Kelly Winfrey of Iowa State University, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. I'd like to have you join us as we size up two newly announced campaigns, finishing up with Hillary Clinton when we come back, and then moving on to Marco Rubio, freshman senator from Florida. And when we come back, we'll ask our analysts what the role, if any, Bill Clinton, former president, has in Hillary Clinton's campaign this time around. We'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. We're on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Politics Day here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer on this Politics Wednesday. Hillary Clinton, newly declared candidate for president in 2016, is in our state. She was here yesterday, as we just heard in the news. We're concentrating on her newly launched reintroduction to Iowans, asking you to give us your view on how you size up Hillary Clinton and her candidacy. A little later, Marco Rubio. We'll talk about him. He announced this week as well. 1-866-780-9100. Well, where has Bill Clinton been during this relaunch of a campaign? In fact, the former president spoke last night at a fundraiser in New York City. He made no mention of his wife's presidential campaign. That was his first public appearance after Hillary Clinton declared her candidacy. He spoke for 25 minutes, mentioned his wife only once, but not in relation to her presidential ambitions. The only place that we see that Bill actually came into the launch is on Saturday night, the day before Hillary Clinton declared her candidacy. Saturday Night Live joked about the Hillary campaign and her husband, Bill Clinton. Here are two actor comedians with their sketch of how, a part of their sketch of how Hillary should announce her candidacy.
I am running because I want to be a voice for women everywhere.
Did someone say women everywhere? Hillary would make a great president.
Thank you.
And I would make an even greater first dude.
Thank you, Bill. That's nice.
Hillary, isn't it crazy that phones can take videos now?
Yeah.
I mean, if they could have done that in the 90s, I'd be in jail.
Great, Bill. I love jokes about that.
Okay, I get it. This election is about you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't want to hog your limelight.
No,
I am leaving.
Okay.
Look at me go.
Yeah.
Bye. I'm gone.
Aren't we such a fun, approachable dynasty?
Saturday Night Live on the eve of Hillary Clinton's announcement to run for 2016. What do you think of that, Kelly, that bit of fun? Of course, the baggage comes with Hillary Clinton.
Yes, it does. This skit was hilarious. But I also think it makes a kind of a good point, is that you have to be careful if you're one of Clinton's campaign strategists about how you're going to use Bill in the campaign. Because when he's there, he tends to steal the limelight, sometimes makes it the Bill Clinton show. And so I think it's a very delicate balance, because we want this, to be about Hillary Clinton, not about Bill Clinton, and about her presidency, not his past presidency. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who still love Bill Clinton. And so having him in certain settings do some stumping for might be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be in a small dose.
Mm-hmm. An odd situation here. Bill Clinton still polls as one of the most popular recent presidents.
Mm-hmm.
People remember that economy during Bill Clinton's era in the 90s. Your thoughts on Bill Clinton in this campaign, Tim Hagel?
Well, just to follow up on what you just said, is that that's kind of the key, is that people are saying, well, is Hillary Clinton going to run for Obama's third term or for Bill Clinton's third term? Well, Bill Clinton's presidency, we had the tech bubble at the time, and so the economy was in pretty good shape. He was doing well working with a Republican Congress at the time, the triangulation and all of that. And so those were seemingly better times than what we've got right now, even though we're in an economic recovery. It's a kind of slow one. But if she then tries to remind people about how good the economy was in the 90s with her husband as president, then, of course, you've got all of the baggage that comes with it. And Bill Clinton, you know, love him or hate him, everybody recognizes that he really can connect with people. Everybody says that. He can work a room and talk to people, get personal with them, look them in the eye, and get you to believe that he's really paying attention to you. And that's something that people haven't said is a quality that Hillary Clinton has. And so to bring Bill in, it shows that kind of discrepancy in their abilities. Hillary Strong has different strengths than what Bill does. And as a result, that comparison may not work to her advantage.
I heard it. Yeah, go ahead, Kelly. Sorry.
I just wanted to kind of throw something in there, though. I think that the important thing is that this needs to be a campaign for Hillary Clinton's first term, not Bill Clinton's third term, not Barack Obama's third term. And I think that's really what she's trying to do, because it should be about her as a candidate, not her continuing, you know, some other male president's term.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I hope you heard the same that I did in one of her early speeches. I think it was yesterday. Hillary Clinton said she wants to get America back on track. I believe those are the exact words. Interesting, isn't it, Kelly, that
mm-hmm.
She should say that, given that a fellow Democrat has been in the White House for 6+ years?
Well, and I think, you know, in her video as well, she mentioned, you know, that things were getting better, but it's still not great. And I think that's a good point. She's trying to sell herself apart from both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And she's disagreed with Barack Obama on certain issues. And she's really kind of made what it seems like campaigning for the middle class a key issue.
Mm-hmm. Tim Hagel, what do you see as Hillary Clinton's most significant vulnerabilities? What does the GOP have its eye on?
Well, probably a combination of things. And in some respect that they're probably going to emphasize some of the baggage we were talking about earlier and some of the things that happened in the 90s in terms of, you know, Watergate, Travelgate, and they could, if you saw that clip of James Carville kind of listing through these things. But when Carville was talking about it, he says, look, this is all old news. It never went anywhere. And for a lot of people, it really is old news. But I think Republicans have current things that they can talk about, too. Benghazi and the email situation and the Clinton Foundation taking money from governments that are less than desirable, shall we say. And so it's a question as to whether any of that really resonates beyond sort of the political class, folks like us that really pay attention to this on an everyday basis, as opposed to folks that really care more about the pocketbook issues or the kitchen table issues. And so that's going to be the challenge for Republicans to sort of criticize her is, are they going to be talking about things that people really care about as opposed to the more day-to-day types of issues?
Politico's headline talks about the GOP's plan to turn Hillary Clinton into Mitt Romney. Their words, the out-of-touch plutocrat who lives in a world of private planes, chauffeured vehicles, and million-dollar homes. Is that the clear strategy of the GOP that you see, Kelly?
I think that it's one potential strategy, it's something that you already see Rand Paul's running television advertisements here in Iowa with that sort of narrative. But I think it could be dangerous for the Republican Party, depending on who the candidate is. You know, if it's a Jeb Bush versus a Hillary Clinton, both kind of political elite, both wealthy. And so it really depends who the Republican candidate ends up being, if that narrative works or applies to everybody.
You're listening to River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Politics Wednesday here. We have with us Kelly Winfrey of Iowa State University, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Let's turn to the other candidate, major party candidate, who declared on Monday. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida urged voters to make a generational voice for new leadership that is not mired in the policies of the past, as he announced he will enter the 2016 race for the White House. As the son of Cuban immigrants, Rubio announced his presidential run at the Freedom Tower in Miami, an Ellis Island of the South that served as a welcoming point for Cuban exiles in America.
We Americans are proud of our history, but our country has always been about the future. And before us now is the opportunity to author the greatest chapter yet in the amazing story of America. But we can't do that by going back to the leaders and ideas of the past. We must change the decisions we are making by changing the people who are making them. And so, that is why tonight, grounded by the lessons of our history, but inspired by the promise of our future, I announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
Marco Rubio, the 43-year-old son of Cuban immigrants, presenting himself as a fresh face to find new approaches to solve challenges to the United States and compete in a global economy. Make the case that Marco Rubio, sum up the case that he's making for the GOP nomination, if you can, Tim Hagel.
Well, he's young and a fresh face, as we're saying. He has a very good personal story talking about how his parents came here for a better life to pursue the American dream and were able to do so and basically provide a launching pad for the success of their son, who then ultimately used that to go on to a so far successful career in politics. The one sort of downside that a lot of people talk about is that he, like actually the other two Republicans in the race, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, is a first-term senator, so he may not be long on the list of accomplishments. But on the other hand, neither was Barack Obama. The problem, of course, is that the Republicans criticized Barack Obama for that lack of experience. Now, I think Rubio and, to a different extent, the other two Republican candidates can make a case that they were perhaps more accomplished at this point in their careers than then-Senator Obama was. But still, there's a certain unease among Republicans about this. But on the other hand, Rubio does have that ability to reach out to an immigrant audience, to Hispanics in particular, whether they're immigrants or not, Hispanic audience, and talk about the immigration issue in ways that perhaps some other Republican candidates might not be able to. And so in that sense, he seems to be an attractive candidate in addition to, again, his youth and energy and all of that.
Tim Hagel, isn't one of the key questions whether he can unite the factions within the GOP, the Tea Party, the mainstream, the conservative Christians? How do you see him faring there?
You know, and that kind of picks up on something Kelly was saying a little bit earlier, in the sense that you have maybe in the Republican primary or caucus season that folks maybe run to the right a little bit. But not all of the candidates necessarily do that. But that is sort of the thing that we see in particular here in Iowa, where you have sort of the social conservative group, the more libertarian-leaning group, and kind of the establishment group. And so for a candidate to be successful, either you need to eliminate your competition within one of those groups or try to find a crossover kind of appeal. And some people are suggesting that Rubio does have a bit of that crossover appeal because he was elected to the Senate as part of a Tea Party candidate, effectively, and is now seen kind of as drifting into that establishment sort of category, not unlike Walker. And in fact, some people suggested that maybe you might see a Walker-Rubio ticket.
Join our conversation as we size up Marco Rubio in this final part of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Kelly Winfrey of Iowa State University, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us what you think of Rubio's case for the GOP nomination, Kelly.
Well, I agree with Tim. You know, his story is very compelling and a little bit of deja vu with Barack Obama's story about being raised by his mother and the struggles that he had. And if I were Hillary Clinton, I would be having a little deja vu from that. But I think that he's a very likable candidate and maybe in a general election could do well. My concern, which Tim kind of got at a little bit, is that I'm not sure he can get the Republican nomination. I think that, you know, his announcement speech, he talked a lot about a variety of issues, kind of in general Republican platform sort of terms. But I wonder if he would really be able to get some of the more conservative elements of the Republican Party, particularly on immigration. You know, he's an advocate of a path to citizenship, which is popular with some and very unpopular with others. And I think that might be one of his kind of weaknesses when it comes to getting out of the primary season.
Immigration is a key when we talk about Marco Rubio. He was part of a bipartisan group of senators that pushed the most sweeping immigration overhaul in a generation in 2013. That obviously failed. On Monday, when Rubio announced he was running for president, he sat down and spoke with NPR's Morning Edition host Steve Inskeep. And this is interesting. Inskeep asked how he would keep from getting hammered in a general election because his immigration bill failed in 2013.
Well, I don't know about the others, but I've done more on immigration than Hillary Clinton ever did. I mean, I helped pass an immigration bill out of a Senate dominated by Democrats. And that's more than she's ever done. She's given speeches on it, but she's never done anything on it. So I have a record of trying to do something on it. It didn't work because at the end of the day, we did not sufficiently address the issue of illegal immigration. And I warned about that throughout that process as well, that I didn't think we were doing enough to give the bill a chance of moving forward in the House.
So here we have Marco Rubio helping write a bipartisan reform bill, then criticizing it. And now he's sort of saying, I need some kudos for working on it, for doing more than Hillary Clinton, Tim Hagel.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a certain amount of sense to make that argument. But that's where, you know, Kelly was saying that this is where a lot of conservatives were particularly unhappy. Now, maybe it was unfair to characterize what he was suggesting in terms of a path to citizenship as amnesty, but the sort of the A word is one that conservatives are very unhappy about because they saw what happened to Reagan in the 80s, that the promise was is that the problem will be solved. there wouldn't be another sort of mass migration. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. And so for a lot of conservatives, what they're really interested in is some way to make sure that, well, if there is a path to citizenship, there is some kind of amnesty, it's not going to happen again. Sort of fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And this is what Rubio has also emphasized now when he talks about this, is that basically it's that secure the border kind of thing. And so that we can control that. And then when we can deal with the people that are already here in one way or another. And it's not necessarily that a path to citizenship would be amnesty in the sense that everybody gets a free pass, but there would likely need to be some sort of, I don't know, fine or additional time that's spent or something. But I can't imagine that he would go with any kind of, like I say, amnesty sort of thing.
How is Marco Rubio likely to do here in Iowa? Kelly, what is your take on that?
Well, I think that, you know, he stands a good chance in Iowa because he is very likable. And I think he'll do well in the kind of format that Iowa offers, where you really get to talk to voters a little more one-on-one. And so I think that people in general will probably like him. But the real question is, are certain parts of the Republican Party just unwilling to vote for him, maybe on the immigration issue?
Mm, I see. Mm-hmm. What other issues stand out in your mind when you connect them with Marco Rubio, Tim Hagel?
Pops into mind immediately, kind of a thing that again, he's got sort of the general view of Republicans. He's going to emphasize the economy, and as part of his personal story, he talks about wanting to make that American dream accessible. So as somebody had mentioned yesterday, I can't recall who to give him credit. But of the four principles that in the earlier segment when Dean Borg was talking about the four principles Hillary Clinton laid out, somebody was saying, well, gee, Marco Rubio would agree with at least three of those, that they're sort of generic enough that, I mean, everybody wants to help the middle class. Everybody wants to help small businesses. The question, of course, is how to do that. And that's where you see the differences between the two. And I think in that sense, Marco Rubio is on pretty solid ground. He's on fairly solid ground with the social conservatives. His big sticking points are going to be the question of immigration. Can he explain his position given his past history on that and his youth, basically, has he accomplished enough and is he a sufficient kind of person that they would feel comfortable, they being Iowans and Iowa Republicans in particular, be comfortable supporting him over somebody that's got more executive experience like one of the governors, whether it's Walker, Perry, or if it's some other governor jumps in.
Well, what about the issue, a social issue like a same-sex marriage? Here we have since our last election, certainly since 2008, a huge change in attitude across the country in terms of the acceptance of same-sex marriage. Now we have 37 states that allow same-sex marriage. It was only in 2009 that Iowa became the third state in the nation to allow same-sex. Now, we have the Republican Party, and also Marco Rubio says the decisions on whether to allow same-sex marriage should be left to the states. Kelly, your thoughts on where this leaves Marco Rubio and perhaps a larger question of GOP candidates?
I think that Republicans in general would be wise to just not talk about that issue if they can, because, you know, you're right, there's kind of a growing trend to make this legal in states. It's more accepted generally by the public. And so I think that too much talk about marriage being between a man and a woman is only going to hurt them, especially with younger voters. Most young voters support same-sex marriage rights. So I think that that's kind of a dangerous issue that they should probably try to avoid talking about if they want to be able to win the more moderate voters in the country.
Yeah, and along those lines that even yesterday I saw an advertisement for former New York Governor George Pataki basically saying that same kind of thing. And some other, Mitch Daniels of Indiana, had said that in the last cycle that basically and Republicans generally would prefer to focus by and large on the economic issues, that seemed to be more pressing rather than the social issues. But on the other hand, there are certain groups that want to hear, you know, where your candidate stands. And many Republicans will say basically that they want to see it left to the states. Of course, the focus has gone less from same-sex marriage itself than to sort of, well, what are the effects of this in terms of, you know, the baker, the photographer, do they have to serve folks, and what are the anti-discrimination laws? And so I think that's probably where you're going to have to see, or probably we'll see Republicans get somewhat involved in that in terms of religious freedom and so forth. But I agree with Kelly that basically they're stronger position is going to be to deal with the economic issues, immigration, things like that, and foreign policy rather than some of the social issues.
Interesting that a rival, certainly a rival with better financial backing, Jeb Bush, fellow Floridian, is an architect of the Common Core education, something that Rubio has opposed.
He has. And the thing about Common Core is interesting is that a lot of conservatives give Jeb Bush a hard time on Common Core and on immigration. And yet when you see the and sort of tag him as being too liberal, too moderate. But when you see the journalists from Florida talk about, they say, look, when he was governor, he governed as a very conservative person. So I think what Jeb Bush has to do is, well, first get into the race for the Republican side.
Declare.
Declare. And then basically explain his positions. And that's true for some other folks that have gotten criticism along these lines. Chris Christie, Common Core, he basically explained it and said, look, it changed from when I initially supported it. And a few other people that initially supported it said the same thing. And so I think that you can make that case. And the key here and what we like in Iowa is come here and make the case. And people will generally listen to you.
Okay. Thank you very much for both of your comments. Kelly Winfrey, thank you. And Tim Hagel, it's been a pleasure having you. And Kelly, welcome aboard. And thank you for giving us your insights. We look forward to many future shows with other insights from you as well.
Thank you.
Kelly Winfrey, lecturer in communication studies at the Carey Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Tim, thank you as well.
Welcome.
About half to two-thirds of American adults use dietary supplements on a regular basis, which makes the results of a recent investigation into popular herbal supplements pretty shocking. Tomorrow we'll discuss the investigation, which found that only 21% of common supplements actually had DNA from the plants advertised on the labels. Do you take supplements? You want to join us tomorrow for River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. River to River, produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Jason Burns helped us out. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.